Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and today we're going to hear about that smoke that's in the sky. Yesterday, boy, it smelled horrible, smelled bad, it smelled dangerous, it felt dangerous, it looked dangerous. So we're going to hear some information about the smoke from the Canadian wildfires and how it's affecting things and how you should take care as wildfires may become more common. We're also going to hear about the elections coming soon, and we're going to hear the national headlines from the Public News Service, the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and more on the WGXC Morning Show. It all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
On Saturday, July 22nd, turn out or tune in to Wave Farm for a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium. Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium will be the 13th installation at Wave Farm's Art Park. And on Saturday, July 22nd, it'll be inaugurated from noon to 6 p.m., with a day of percussionist performances. Those percussionists include Lisa Stoneberg and Leah Bowden, Azuki Legba and special guests, Chris Corsano and Bobby Previtt. And Saturday, July 22nd's performances are part of Upstate Art Weekend, which is at Wave Farm and many other locations. Tune in or turn out to a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium, Saturday, July 22nd from noon to 6 p.m. in the Wave Farm Art Park in Acre.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Igers Kildas and Louisa Sabin Kildas of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, June 7th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. The Times Union reported about the horrible air conditions throughout the area on June 6th as smoke from Canadian wildfires could be seen everywhere. State Department of Environmental Conservation officials said at a virtual news conference on June 6th that it was the worst effects of wildfires in the area in over two decades. In 2002, similar smoke from Canadian wildfires also filled the Hudson Valley. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, quote, "We are looking at an unprecedented fire season here, certainly unprecedented level of fire in the Canadian regions. Today, the sky is hazy, visibility is terrible, and you can smell the smoke in the air," unquote. That smoke is from about 100 wildfires in the Quebec area, which has left a yellowish haze locally. Officials are warning about so much particulate matter in the air that anyone with asthma, emphysema, and other cardiopulmonary disorders or heart disease should take extra caution. Sago said, quote, "If you've been out on the street today and walking around, you can probably experience impacts to your eyes, your nose, your throat," unquote. Department of Health Director of Environmental Health Gary Ginsberg said hospital admissions often rise when air quality reaches such bad levels. NYS Messonnet's lead air quality researcher, Bupal Shrestha, said we should expect more frequent smoke storms like this. Quote, "The frequency and intensity of such wildfire activities are increasing as a result of hotter and drier conditions due to climate change, and studies have shown that this will continue into the future," unquote, Bupal said. Quote, "Wildfires and their impacts on air quality will be more of a continual issue for people to deal with," unquote. A little rain fell later in the day on June 6th over much of the area, clearing the air a bit. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports that a federal court on June 6th ruled that local executive orders in Rockland and Orange counties stopping hotels from accepting migrants bused from New York City is unconstitutional. Existing temporary restraining orders issued by state Supreme Court justices remain in effect, though, at least temporarily stopping the busing of humans to those counties. Orange County's temporary restraining order lasts at least through June 21st. Republican governors in Florida and Texas and the Democrat New York City mayor have been busing migrants around the country for political reasons. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that a bill is being discussed in Albany as the legislature concludes to move New York's presidential primaries from April 30th to April 2nd. That's the same day Connecticut and Pennsylvania hold their primary elections, so it would create a large pull to get candidates to visit. But it does cost more for taxpayers than putting it on the same day as New York State and congressional primaries, currently scheduled for the final Tuesday in June. But Democrat Party leaders are telling states that have their primary votes held the same day as two bordering states, they would get a 15% extra number of delegates at the party convention. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, June 7th. Local early morning temperatures range from 41 degrees in Copaic to 53 in Voorheesville. Regional average soil temperature is 58 degrees. Pollen levels took a dip, but could you even tell? Everything smells like smoke. And yes, you can blame Canada. The wildfires are still burning, and with over 150 individual fires happening right now, the only hope is for the wind to just change directions. And that's not looking like it's going to happen. Anyone watching regular radar may note everything has been and continues to come from up north. Today will be orange with moderate cloud cover, smoky air, and a high of 73 degrees at 1 p.m. Some light rain is possible this afternoon. Up in the mountains, expect wind gusts all day. Overnight, temperatures drop to 48 degrees. Then, tomorrow, chances for more rain show up mostly in the afternoon. High of 67 happens at 12 p.m. Since the winds don't want to shift, tomorrow will also likely have a smoky flavor. 48 degrees overnight takes us into a cool Friday with even more chances for rain and a high of 69. Saturday, looking wet with a high of 73. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:06 a.m., high tide at 5:54 a.m., low tide at 12:58 p.m., and high, once again, at 6:45 p.m. The river temperature will be 71 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. And none of that matters because, as of what I observed yesterday, no one will be on the river due to the air conditions, which is smart. Sunset today will be at 8:14 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 327 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently still holding fair below 4 MHz during daylight hours, with fair conditions below 60 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 133. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
The way I understand it, this person came into your home and stole all of your radios.
Every radio I had to my name.
Including transistors?
Yes. Well, he left me one earplug, I'll say that for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, did he take anything else?
Just the radios. And a couple of pieces of fruit.
I see. Well, what...
A banana and 2 Kadota figs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deny him the fruit.
No. Are you and your husband going to replace the radios?
Well, we'll have to. Arthur is late for work because he has no radio to keep reminding him of the time and traffic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to keep me company while I work around the house.
I can imagine.
We have a 10-room house. We had a radio in every room.
Then he stole all 10 radios?
11.
11.
He also stole the car.
Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people. That's all.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela, menina que vem, que passa num doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema. O seu balançado é mais que um poema. É a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Ah, por que estou tão sozinho? Ah, por que tudo é tão triste? Ah, beleza que existe. Ah, beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha. Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo sorrindo se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. She walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently that when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. Oh, but he watches so sadly. How can he tell her he loves her? Yeah. To the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at him. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, he smiles, but she doesn't see.
Thank you. chit-chat. Oh yeah, cut the chit-chat. Can we cut the chit-chat? Can we cut the chit-chat?
And we are chit-chat. Chit-chat. We are chit-chat. So, who do we have here today?
Bree, Tuli, Jaleesa.
And we are
chit-chat.
The sky today? All that smoke, the whole entire sky is smoke. I can't even see the trees across the street.
That's from fire, wildfires in Canada.
Canada wildfire, guys. It's like, it smells like poop outside. It smells so bad, guys. Outside, it smells really bad. And like, you can just see it's orange and it kind of freaks me out. Like, me and my friends, we were talking about our last moments alive. And then we were talking about how, like, how much we love each other. And that if anything happens, we love each other.
Well, I think we're kind of safe, but we do want to remember the people in Canada and other places who are having all of these kind of natural and man-made disasters. You know, you talk about global warming and things getting so dry that, you know, too much sunlight can start to kindle stuff. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But you guys are going to help us with that global warming thing, because you all are going to take the political offices that are going to, your generation is going to help get it all together, right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
We're trying our hardest, but all the generations have said that.
Well, everybody's doing their part to push the football further down the field. Maybe you won't get it to the goal line.
Our school's definitely doing something to push the freaking football. That's all they spend money on.
Actually, they're not, because did you forget about this year?
This football season was so trash.
Didn't they have to quit in, like, the middle?
They had to quit because the kids didn't want to go to school. They were skipping to go do drugs, and they didn't have a team anymore because everybody got kicked out. And the middle school had to do the football homecoming, but they won, so who cares?
Yeah.
Oh, they won. Well, fantastic.
They won homecoming. We literally, like, never won homecoming. That's how bad we are, guys.
Well, that's why it's important for us to have conversation, because it might encourage some people to take a different path that's on the right path when they hear some of the good things that you all are doing. And I don't know why y'all doing that, what you're doing right now, but, you know, we're not gonna do that. But what we are going to do is we're going to move on to our slang word of the day.
Okay, I'm really excited about this one. Jaleesa came up with it, so I'm going to let her tell you all about it.
Okay, so the slang word of today is ayo, and it's spelled A-Y-O. You can add as many O's as you want, but ayo is just basically...
Wait, before you tell them what it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm of that generation when they told me the word was ayo, I asked them, did they know who Harry Belafonte was?
Tuli started singing.
And she started singing the banana song. So there's not that big of a generation gap, okay? So back to you, Jaleesa. What is AO in your generation?
AO, basically, you just say it as a response to something that sounds very, like, out of pocket and really weird. Like, it's just like when someone says something that's suspicious, you just come back with them, or come back at them with ayo, because that is so odd. Why would you say?
Okay, so I don't remember which word we did. I think it was me and Chloe a couple months ago when we did bussin. But you have to have the enthusiasm with both of those words. Okay, if you say ayo, if you just say it like that, nobody's going to take you seriously. You got to really exaggerate it. It's got to be like, ayo.
There's an inflection that has to go with it.
If you don't say it with enthusiasm, you're being sarcastic.
Okay, so give us another example of the use of ayo. Is that right?
Yeah, good job. We're so proud of you. Okay, do you have one or do you want me to go? Okay, so as an example, like in 2020, everybody was in lockdown, everybody was bored and everything. And like, basically, so, like, I don't even know how to explain it. Okay, so people were being really, really weird. They were always saying weird stuff. The guys were, like, kissing, flirting with their friends in public. And the other guys were like, hey, yo, that's weird. Because it is weird. Why are you doing that? That's so weird. So, you know what? They had to get called out. And maybe some of them changed for the better. Some of them definitely did not, because I still hear ayo in the hallways.
And Tuli, what's an AO for you?
I feel like AO for me is like when, like, if you see two random people hanging out with each other and then they start acting a little flirtatious, they'll be like, hey, yo, oh my goodness gracious, golly gee, what am I looking at right now? And then, like, you can say it like that, you know?
Okay, so am I hearing that public displays of affection are an AO?
Well, not public displays of affection. Weird and odd public displays. Like, if you're, like, a really weirdo and you just say something that's so incredibly odd, then you respond to that with AO. Or, like, if you hear somebody, like, in the hallways or just wherever you hear something that maybe you shouldn't have heard and it's just really weird, in your brain you could just be like, AO, like, what's wrong with them?
Yeah.
Okay. Like the person who wanted to hide out in the cemetery so they could be like, well,
no, they are. They already are werewolves.
Hey, yo. All right.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
AM Radio fosters a sense of local identity, connecting people through regional programming that reflects the unique perspectives and traditions of their communities.
Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington says the removal of AM radio from new cars would affect tens of millions of Americans who rely on it for emergency alerts, crop reports, and connection to government services. A bipartisan effort is underway to preserve AM stations after eight automakers announced they plan to drop them from new models due to signal interference from electric vehicles. The Human Rights Campaign has declared a state of emergency for LGBTQ people in the U.S., citing more than 500 anti-LGBTQ bills in more than a dozen states this year. President Kelly Robinson says violence has become a lived reality for her community.
It's fueled by nearly unfettered access to guns, political extremism, and rhetoric that is deliberately devised to make our community less safe, less equal, and less free.
Robinson says at least 76 bills have become law. The Atlanta City Council has approved funding for a controversial new police training center. Reverend James Woodall with the Southern Center of Human Rights calls the more than $30 million project an assault on democracy.
A vote today for this paper is a public endorsement of war, of human rights abuse, of militarized streets in our city.
The vote followed a 16-hour public meeting in which hundreds of people voiced their opposition. Dozens of people protesting at the site have been charged with domestic terrorism. A new Mississippi law requires people to obtain permission from police for any protests near state government buildings in Jackson. Supporters of the law say it's meant to prevent crime, but Daniel Holmes of the Poor People's Campaign says the legislature is working to take away local autonomy from the majority Democratic capital city.
This is a very, very important time to be out, take a stand, march, and raise our voices. The time is now.
Several large protests have taken place in Jackson this year regarding courts and policing, as well as the failure of Jackson's municipal water system. Three chemical companies have reached a more than $1 billion deal to settle claims over the proliferation of PFAS, known as forever chemicals, polluting many U.S. drinking water systems. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says the chemicals are everywhere.
Many of our small rural communities are struggling with this issue, and so we are working very strategically to determine the safe levels.
Two of the nation's largest insurers say they will no longer sell property or casualty coverage to new customers in California. Allstate and State Farm say thousands of natural disasters have made it too costly to underwrite policies. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. YouTube announced June 2nd that it will no longer remove disinformation about fraud in the 2020 election. Does this change mean that election disinformation will go unchecked for 2024? In a statement, Google-owned YouTube said it will no longer remove content which promotes false claims about the 2020 election because, quote, that while removing this content does curb some misinformation, it could also have the unintended effect of curtailing political speech without meaningfully reducing the risk of violence or other real-world harm, unquote. YouTube has already restored former President Trump's account as of March 2023. The video platform claims it will continue to disallow content aiming to mislead voters about the time, place, means, or eligibility requirements for voting, and false claims which could discourage voting and encourage others to interfere with the democratic process. Despite earlier warnings from democracy advocates, YouTube didn't change its election disinformation policy until December 2020, then didn't aggressively enforce those rules in the 2022 midterms. Disinformation watchdog Media Matters for America released a statement about the weakened policy saying, quote, YouTube and the other platforms like Facebook have made it clear that one attempted insurrection wasn't enough. They're setting the stage for an encore. We have a link to YouTube's statement and comments from groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at Mediasanctuary.org.
Now joining us once again is retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson for our weekly discussion of weather and climate. Welcome back, Hugh.
Hello, how you doing?
We're doing great over here. We missed you last week due to the holiday, but you did a great job talking with Kaylin and David about the Mechanicville tornado that was 25 years ago. And now
25 years and a week.
And a week. Oh, my goodness. And now we have a few disasters to discuss. For instance, what is going on with all the wildfires and in Canada? And does it relate to the air quality alert we just recently received?
It sure does. It's been just an awful time in Canada. Some of the worst forest fires they've ever had. First, they were out in Alberta, then they were in Nova Scotia, and now we got them in Quebec and even Ontario. Up to 6.7 million of acres have already been burned. I think this could be a record. If not, it's closing in on it. But this time, the smoke, because it's closer to us and the flow, is actually reaching the ground. So I saw earlier today, it wasn't a big deal. And a couple hours, I'm like, what the heck's going on? And you can actually smell it. And we have an air quality alert. We have over 100 millimeters per part per square yard of smoke in that particular area. So it's over 100. That's the number that when you reach 100, it's sensitive for unhealthy, for people who have asthma breathing issues. So yeah, if you have any of that, you do not want to be exerting outside through tomorrow morning. It's pretty bad. I can smell it here in my porch.
So that's the land and the air. Let's talk about water. I know that whales and sharks have been swimming much closer to the coast, and whales have been dying more. Sharks have been biting more. What's going on with that?
Well, there's a lot of different things, Bria. There's a lot of different things, theories about it. But I do think that the very warm Atlantic waters have probably thrown, we've seen this with a lot of different things, aspects of ecosystems getting messed up, for lack of a better word, by the uneven distribution of temperature, the warming of the waters, especially whales. Whales do not like warm water, and sharks aren't a big fans of them either. So I think a lot of times they come close to the coast because the water can be a little cooler, right, believe it or not, near the coastline, at least this time of year. So, basically, you have the close proximity of sharks. Sharks don't really want to bite or eat people, but people get in the way. And if you're wearing jewelry and you have a little bit of a cut or something with any blood, that excites them. As far as the whales go, they're dying. It's very sad, but it's probably the same thing, that they're just getting basically much warmer water than they're used to. And that could be part of the problem anyway. So, yeah, not a good situation.
Sorry, go ahead, Bria.
I'm a little confused by what you said about the water being cooler near the land. I would think it would be warmer because it would be shallower.
No, well, it does later in the season. That's true. But the really warm waters are actually further offshore. If you look at the maps of the water temperature near the Gulf Stream and the warmer water, but at this time of year, the water near the coast is still pretty cool right down to the mid-Atlantic. That will warm up by July, and especially August, it will get much warmer. and then you have the jellyfish and things like that. But we're still running temperatures in the 60s as opposed to 70, you know, which isn't too warm. But when you get further out, it actually gets a little warmer in some cases, except for right along the Gulf Stream. I'm still seeing that signature where you get that cool stripe near the Gulf Stream, which is still, you know, we've been seeing that for a lot of times now for a couple of years. And I'm wondering if that really is a weakening of the Gulf Stream, but that's a very narrow band, whereas the rest of the Atlantic is pretty warm.
A quick follow-up question, Hugh. Does the warm temperature of the water have anything to do with oxygen level for the fish and the whales?
Yeah, I think here's the thing. I mean, when the water gets too warm, the plankton and things that create oxygen die, and that actually you have too much carbon dioxide in the water. And that's part of the CO2 emissions thing. We're putting too much CO2 into the water, and that's causing part of the, that's a very good question. That's causing part of the problem as well. Because CO2 absorbs into the water. That's part of it, what we call a sink. That, you know, it sinks into the water. It sinks into, you know, of course, the plants use it. That's a good thing, but there's too much of it for them to use. So the excess goes into the atmosphere, into the water, and that's part of why it's warming up. Yep.
Okay, so speaking of warming up, it felt like summer a few days ago, and now not so much. I recently heard that there are different official definitions for the seasons depending on the months, or sometimes the solstices and equinoxes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. As a meteorologist, I go with the meteorological definition of summer, and it really curves in pretty nicely to the mean temperature. If you look at the mean temperature curve, the warmest 3 months are pretty close to June, July, and August, so that's summer. Now, if you look at it from a solstice point of view, the summer solstice is around June 21st. That's when we have our highest sun angle, longest day, and a lot of people tie in summer with that. But again, if you look at the temperature curve, we've already been through a pretty good warm portion of our season. And then, of course, you have the economic beginning of summer, which is Memorial Day. Some people argue that that's the beginning. And then one other thing I'll point out real quickly, early June, there always, not always, but often is a cooling, and that's what we're getting right now. A lot of people call this Shepherd's Cool. It's where you have a little dip in the first 10 days or so of June. You can actually see a little dip in temperatures, especially across the Northeast. And indeed, we have a trough that replaced the ridge we had last week, and we're getting these cutoff lows that are kind of pivoting around us. We're not going to get good rain out of them, but we are going to get deposits. We're bringing the smoke, of course. That's the bad part. But they will bring opportunities for showers as disturbances rotate around them for the rest of the week. So it's going to be kind of an unsettled week, cool, with scattered showers, probably no soaking rain. I'm looking at my yard now, and it's quite morte. It's quite brown and dying.
Okay, so we're going to have a little bit of rain. Are we going to have any more of the problems we saw further back in May where the temperature dipped so low we had to bring our plants in, or have we made it past that?
I think we've made it past that. I you know, with the possible exception of the Adirondacks, I really don't see the rest of us getting down there freezing. In fact, in Albany, I believe the coldest temperature we've ever had in the month of June is 35, so that would be enough for maybe a little frost. But this time of year, think about it, it would only get cold like for an hour or two. It's not like fall when we have much longer morning, you know, darker morning. So I think we're basically out. Hudson Valley and Glens Falls South, probably out of it completely. So you can plant now. It's just now it's so dry. The soil is rock hard.
I'm starting to get a signal that we are coming to the end of our show. Thank you so much, Hugh, for joining us again, and we look forward to having you on next week. We hope you enjoyed your Memorial Day holiday.
We did. I hope you did, too. And just, yep.
I want to thank you because I love having the chance to ask you questions about anything having to do with weather. So I appreciate you honoring our curiosity and coming up with answers for anything we ask. So thanks again,
absolutely,
and we look forward to talking with you next week.
Okay,
and that's our show.
Be safe out there. Yeah, okay, be safe out there with the air quality. Yep.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Philip Antuzzo reports in the Times Union that hundreds of journalists employed by Gannett walked off their jobs June 5th to protest layoffs and other cost-cutting measures. Some of the journalists were from Hudson Valley-based Gannett newspapers, the Times Herald Record, the Poughkeepsie Journal, and the Journal News, which publishes online at loha.com. The Gannett has let go nearly half of its workforce since 2019. Asher Stockler, a Journal News reporter and secretary of the Hudson Valley News Guild, the News Guild division representing the Hudson Valley journalists, said, and I quote, "With every vacant position, another politician's corruption goes unnoticed, another mom-and-pop store loses out on needed publicity, another parent is unaware of the actions of their local school board, another high school lacrosse game goes uncovered, another low-income resident has no place left to turn when their benefits are in jeopardy," end quote. Locally, there are only a few Gannett journalists left. The Times Herald Record and the Poughkeepsie Journal have no full-time news reporters, one covers Poughkeepsie part-time, and no editors. Peter Kramer, a Westchester-based reporter for Gannett's USA Today network and chair of the Hudson Valley News Guild, said, and I quote, "We walked out today because CEO Mike Reed has decimated our newsrooms. He crows about his commitment to local journalism as he strip mines our newspapers, sells off properties, and pays bottom dollar salaries. These decisions tear at the very heart of the communities we are dedicated to serving," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Austin Jefferson reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan held a town hall gathering at Congregation Emmanuel in Kingston on June 4th and said he is concerned that fellow lawmakers are pushing back on, and I quote, "common sense," end quote, gun legislation and fact-finding efforts targeting anti-Semitism and hate groups. Ryan, a Democrat who represents the 18th Congressional District, is part of an anti-Semitism task force that has requested funding from the Department of Homeland Security to begin a study of Holocaust education's prevalence in the nation's public schools after Republican lawmakers block funding from other sources. Ryan said, and I quote, "I risk my life for this country, for fundamental rights and freedoms that we just cannot let be taken away from us. Those are red lines," end quote. On migrants arriving in the Hudson Valley, Ryan said, and I quote, "We need real federal resources to deal with a federal problem," end quote. Adding that the federal government should declare a state of emergency to free up resources to combat the crisis. Ryan also said House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is blocking gun legislation. Ryan said, and I quote, "No Republicans are speaking out and saying we want to vote on this. There's not a small extreme sector. It's the entire group, unfortunately. I think it's a real shame," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that New York City is raising its water rates and charging Hudson Valley towns a larger increase than city residents. New York City gets its drinking water from the Catskill Mountains. It is increasing prices for upstate municipalities by 6.8%, but only raising rates for customers within the city by 4.4%. Communities in Ulster County and closer to New York City buy their water from the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. Matthew Gehoe, the operations director for Northern Westchester Water Works, complains the price increases should be the same for Hudson Valley towns as New York City residents. Gehoe said, and I quote, "It's the golden rule. He who has the goal makes the rules," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzone announced on June 5th that the Greene County Grand Jury indicted two state inmates on possession of weapons within the Greene County Correctional Facility in Coxsackie. Stephen Gomes, 31, was indicted on three counts of first-degree promoting prison contraband, a felony, and Joseph Bonilla, 39, was indicted on one count of first-degree promoting prison contraband. Gomes allegedly had three separate shank-type weapons, sharpened pieces of metal measuring between 5 and 7.5 inches, while incarcerated at Green Correctional Facility. Bonilla at Coxsackie Correctional Facility allegedly had a homemade shank-type weapon sharpened to a point and measuring more than 4 inches. Both inmates have been moved to other facilities but will be tried locally on the weapons charges. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. You can find out things to do in person and virtually on the WGXC community calendar, like on Wednesday, June 7th at the Dewey Hall in Massachusetts. There is poetry from Francis Roth and Sarah Thames. Thursday, June 8th, the Hudson Thursday Market is back in the public square on 7th Street between Columbia and Warren Street with all sorts of vendors. That's from 4 to 7 p.m. Also Thursday, June 8th at 4 p.m., local musician Abby Lappin teaches movement and music at Storytime, the Hudson Area Library. Friday, June 9th, there's a community spaghetti dinner at the American Legion in Greenville from 4:30 to 7 p.m. It's eat in or take out there. There's a community care clinic at the Hudson Area Library at 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 10th, with information about acupuncture, herbal medicines, Narcan strips, and more. Sunday, June 11th, there's a history of Lionel Trains at the Mountaintop Historical Society in Palinville. And the traditional Irish music session is at the Shamrock House in East Durham, Sunday, June 11th from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more about all these events and add your own at the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a 3-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many 3-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a 3-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
You're listening to Wave Farm Radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill, New York. This is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist. We're around the table talking, and we're talking with Mr. Luke E. Forbes. So delighted to have you back, Luke E. And as we often do, we want our listeners to know a little more about you. So I give you 60 seconds to give us your elevator introduction to Mr. Luke E. Forbes that you want to share with our listening audience. Then we're going to get into our little conversation.
How is everyone doing? My name is Luke E. Forbes. I am the campaign manager for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. The Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition is a housing coalition, so we work on developing and enforcing rights for tenants as well as people who are housing insecure. We also help address the intersections between housing justice and criminal justice. We've seen that a lot of people who are housing insecure also have criminal backgrounds or develop criminal backgrounds, and those with criminal backgrounds also end up housing insecure. So that's our work, and that's a little bit about myself.
Well, that's a little bit about yourself, about what you do, but tell us a little bit about you, who you are.
Outside of what I do, I'm Luke E. Forbes. I am a formerly incarcerated individual myself. I was incarcerated at the age of 15 before I was released at the age of 24, finally, where I ended up getting into activism and film. That's a little bit about myself.
And I must say to those who have not had the pleasure of meeting you that you are a delight. Audience, you might be able to tell from his voice that he's articulate and intelligent, and just a delight to know and to be working with in this community. We're so grateful to you for being here with us today, and so grateful for you being part of the Hudson community, the Hudson family, Columbia County family. And
I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, listen, it comes from the heart. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't so. And that's to your credit, because you are the one who has done the work. I'm just astute enough to see it and recognize it. So I appreciate all the work that you put into being who you are and doing what you do. And that's why, you know, I wanted to bring you back on the show so more people could know about you and learn more about you. And when they see you and what you're doing, you know, they'll step up and speak to you about it. And we want to give you an opportunity now to tell us some more, because you've been doing some dynamic stuff, some innovative things, and you have something coming up on June 11th. And so I'd like you to talk to me and our listeners a little bit about what you have planned, what you envision it to be. Yes, talk about it.
So on Sunday, June 11th at 12 p.m. to 3 p.m., we'll be at the Parliament Hill Park on Front and Warren Street. We'll be hosting our registration, cookout, and canvassing event. So we're going to really be trying to, again, just really increase the public engagement around the voting process. We all know that it's important for us to get the resources and things that we need, as well as holding our leaders accountable for their actions. And the best way to really do that and voice our opinions, as well as make sure that we're heard, is through the voting process. So we really want to just register as many new voters as possible and remind those who are currently registered to go vote at early voting. The early voting starts on June 17th to the 25th, and actual primary elections is going to be on the 27th. The general election is going to be on November 8th. So having this on June 11th gives us that opportunity to really start getting out to those voters and letting them know that they need to either register if they aren't already registered, or just letting folks know to go and vote early or vote at the primary. We really need folks to be more politically engaged, just so that we can make sure that our communities are getting the proper amount of resources that they need. And the way to do that, again, is to just really have community members express their opinions through their voting block.
And so, Luki, the apathy about voting, and I recognize you're doing some innovative things. I'm sure it's not new to you or to some people, but it's new to me, the idea of a voter registration cookout day. So what would people expect when they came out for the cookout? What would they expect to happen?
So we're always about empowering the community through information and education. So not only would you learn about what voting is, you'll learn how to register to vote. You'll learn how to update your voter record, check your voter status, find election information, and any other questions you may have about the voting process. This is an opportunity for the community to come together around food. However, we will be canvassing. So we would be asking folks to come outside with us and even go door to door to get more folks outside and registered. So that's our main goal. We do have opportunities for folks to volunteer in other ways other than just going outside and canvassing, even though we would love to have the streets flooded with a bunch of people just going door to door to let folks know that early voting is about to start. And that we'll be serving food. And if they want to learn more about how they can get registered, they can come down to the park and eat and learn with us. So it will be more of an opportunity for folks to really just come together as a community and answer questions, eat some good food, have some fun laughs, chill by the waterfront, and really just get to understand the power of voting, especially voting locally.
You know, I really like the idea of the cookout because it gives parents an opportunity to bring their children out. And I know that I've seen some biopics where people who have been involved in the political process said that they got early starts, that their parents or some other relative took them to some sort of political event, and they were inspired and, you know, encouraged and that kind of a thing, had such an experience of it. So I think that the cookout idea is really helpful and important for that. And so, and that you pick the Promenade Hill Park, which actually there's a, it's a plaque sort of a landmark, a marker, I guess, that said it's Parade Hill. I was there after the Manhattan Parade the other day up there. I saw it said Parade Hill. I said, oh, how appropriate, because the parade was ending there. But whether you call it Parade Hill or Promenade Hill, it's at the foot of Front and Warren, and you'll see the crowd out there. You'll see the people out there if you show up, people out there listening. And so, you know, when you talk about canvassing and going door to door, what is the area that you're looking to cover and how many canvases are you going to need?
So our goal is to really have about 15 canvassers out there throughout the day to just really knock on folks' doors in the area. I would say we're trying to cover the whole Hudson, but it's just going to be really hard unless we, again, continue to get as many canvassers out there as possible. We're trying to engage folks who aren't currently active in voting, so our walking list is going to be kind of spread out throughout the city in different areas.
Are you going to be working from a list of that shows you who is registered and then knocking people off that way? Or are you just going to literally go door to door?
It's going to be a little bit of both, because we, again, want to remind those folks who are currently registered to get out for early voting. And those who aren't registered to go ahead and register, invite them down to the cookout. If they don't want to just fill out the form online or the ones that we hand them, they could go down to the cookout and grab a plate and fill it out there. And people will be there to guide them through the process as well.
Excellent. And so what about people who are like hearing impaired or visually impaired? Is there any assistance for them down at the cookout?
Now that you say that, I'm definitely going to make sure that we have some type of form. Like we're also going to be pulling in other partners to make sure that that language barrier isn't there. But now that you're bringing up the aspect of people with other forms of disabilities, I know that there is accommodations for them, but we'll make sure that they're there at the event as well.
Okay, cool. Because that just popped into my mind as we're talking, which is why I like talking, because new things always come up. So I want to be a canvasser. Say somebody out there wants to be a canvasser. What kind of requirements are you looking for? What would I have to know in order to present myself to be a canvasser?
Essentially, you really don't have to know anything. Just show up at 11:30 and we'll walk you through the process. We'll get you canvassing ready to go out door to door. We'll provide you with a script so that you know what to say, how to speak to people, or you could send me an email at civil.rights@hudsoncatskillhousing.org. I repeat, civil.rights@hudsoncatskillhousing.org. And we'll be able to just walk you through that process. And it's fairly simple.
Wow, that is wonderful. Now, is this, do you have to be voting age to be a canvasser? Is this something that high school students could do too?
So about that legality, I want to go back to the for more information before I answer that. I don't want to give out false information.
Okay, well, no worries. And
I know for a fact that if you are canvassing, though, you can always bring high schoolers along with you.
Mm-hmm. And that expands, you know, what I said earlier, an opportunity for people to get involved at a younger age, you know. So now I saw in your email that you were looking for additional volunteers to help with tablers and volunteer cooks and stuff. Do you still have that as a need?
We're always accepting of volunteers for any aspect of our events. And if you are free on Sunday from 12 to 3, please stop by, especially if you're willing to volunteer as a cook or a canvasser or a tabler. Again, we'll provide you with the proper training. Unless you're like volunteering to cook, we hope that you come knowing some basics on how to cook. Just so that we don't want to serve anybody any bad food or anything like that. But for tabling, for things like that, we're always looking for folks to come help. We can set you up. It would never be, it's always going to be work that we can have folks do to help out and engage.
Okay. And so now is there, I mean, we're believing, hoping, and I'll be praying for good weather. But is there a rain date or inclement weather date?
No, not as of right now. If it does rain and we need to cancel, we'll contact folks who've already RSVP'd and let them know the different date that we'll be setting for this.
Okay. Well, we're going to just believe that prayers are going to be heard and answered so that it doesn't have to be canceled, because, you know, it to me, it's just a great idea, and I look forward to seeing it come into fruition. I've seen you do some other events, and you've got a really good team over there. And so people who've never met Mr. Lukey Forbes or members of the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, if you're even hearing about it for the first time, and this will be your first time even thinking about coming out, come out so you can meet these young people, these dynamic young people who are doing some things. And this whole issue about housing and housing justice, and then making the connection or the intersection between criminal justice and housing justice, I think that, you know, having someone who has the lived experience and also someone that is living proof that, you know, second chances do work, are worth it. People are worth giving them a second chance, and sometimes more than a second chance. So that, you know, attention is being given to that. So is there anything that you can tell us?